November 4th, and I'm here. Is it November 4th or
something? Yes, it's okay. The 4th.
November 4th, and I'm here with Dorothy Schwartz-Fleshman. And we are going to talk about what happened after graduation. And you started working right away. So can you tell me what your first job was after graduation?
Yes, it wasn't immediately after graduation, but in late summer, I went to the Observer newspaper, which was Legrand's Daily, and I applied for a job with a Mr. Shiro, and he hired me as a reporter. And so that fall, I went to work at the newspaper. And the next school year, they asked me if I would like to have a scholarship and go to Eastern Oregon College and continue my education and maybe get into a journalistic class. And so I did that. And they gave me a scholarship for $75, and that paid my year's tuition, which was three terms. And I had to buy my own books, but they had a lot of used books, so it didn't cost a great deal to get the books that I needed for the classes.
Mm-hmm.
And going to college seemed to change me and advance my maturity, because my grades came much easier than they did in high school. And I enjoyed being in college. And I took up band and orchestra along with the regular needed classes. I did try German, but I dropped that one because I couldn't seem to understand and learn the language at that time. But otherwise, everything went very well. And I became co-editor of the Beacon, which was the school newspaper.
Where do you suppose that your interest came for journalism?
It probably backs up to when I was about in the third grade. Our teacher told us to find out something about the history of Union County and our lives, how we fit into Union County. I went to visit my aunt Levin, Rosa Levin, because across the street from her was what used to be the old courthouse. It was on Cedar and B Avenue. The house was still there, but of course it was no longer used as a courthouse. People by the name of Russell lived there at that time, but my aunt did tell me that it had been a courthouse, and back up there was the home of Ben Brown, who had settled Old Town. Then from there, I guess I had imagination and wanted to write stories, so I would put things down on paper. I got acquainted with the librarian Gertrude Wagner at the public library in the children's department, and she encouraged me in my writing. When I would write something, I'd take it to her, and she would look it over and make suggestions or any corrections. But even though I now know that it was very primary, she encouraged me all along the way, even up into high school. When I got on the school newspaper, the Tiger Highlights, then she was still there for me. Mm-hmm. So she was a very strong influence in my young life.
Were you more interested in writing stories then, or in editing, or what part of the business really drew you?
It was the writing, but I didn't do too well in writing stories. That's what I tried to do. I found that what I really was strongest in was nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began researching the history of Union County and collecting data on that. And so that's what I have, are files of little notes of things about Union County.
And so this love of Union County and writing and journalism led you into a career, really?
Yes, with the newspaper. Mm-hmm. When I finished college, though, I didn't go back to the newspaper, and I wonder to this day why not. I got a job at Montgomery Ward in the catalog department, and there I met my husband, George Fleshman, mm-hmm. who was, he was coming in the door with a friend of mine, and I had just gotten back from lunch. So I very slowly put my purse away and arranged to turn around at just the time that they got to the catalog desk so that my friend Norma would have to introduce me to the fellow that she was with.
So this was a life-changing moment?
Yes, yes it was. And I found out that he was a window dresser at Montgomery Ward's before he went into the service. And when he came back, he was trying again to get a position there, which they gave him. And of course, we double dated with a couple there in the store, went to a movie, as I recall. And we met in September, just after our birthdays. His is the 7th and mine is the 10th. We met just after that, and we were engaged in October, and then we married on the 21st of December of 1946. Mm-hmm. So we didn't waste time with a long courtship, but I went right into marriage. And at that time, he finished schooling up here at the college. So we lived in a trailer house on the college campus for a short time before moving to Eugene, where he wanted to finish his schooling at the University of Oregon. While there, I played in the university summer band and with my clarinet, because music was always a very strong part of my life, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there we moved to Salem, where George was in a management training session with Montgomery Ward's.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a home in Salem and had three sons that we raised to teenage in Salem. At that time we moved back to LeGrand because he was transferred with Social Security Administration to LeGrand office, and here we've been ever since.
Now, when you returned to LeGrand, did you return to work?
No, I didn't. We were raising the boys. I had worked as a secretary in a church in Salem. So when I was here in LeGrand, I relieved the woman who was a secretary at the Christian church for a couple weeks while she was on vacation. But basically, I wasn't employed for quite some time. That came later on.
And what kind of work was it that you continued in after all those years raising kids?
I did work at the newspaper for a while, but I had another job too. It was with the Realty who's a secretary that kept track of the business of the multiple listing for real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at that for a while. Then the Observer needed someone for summertime to fill the office of someone who was going on vacation. And so I did that. And I wanted to stay, but of course there were no openings. And at just as I finished the term there, the owner of the Eastern Oregon Review, which was a weekly newspaper, came over and asked me if I would like to be editor for the Eastern Oregon Review.
Mm-hmm.
I had never thought about being an editor, just a reporter, but he made it very clear that they would help me and they would like me to come, so I did.
So what was the, where was the Eastern Oregon Review located?
It was on Adams Avenue, next to the Sacagawea Hotel.
Can you tell me more about the building itself?
The review had been there for quite a few years, but it wasn't there originally, and I need to look at my notes to find out where it was located.
Dorothy, you have a lot of knowledge about the history of the newspaper. Can you share with me some of the details?
As far as I've been able to research, it was originally called the Le Grand Tribune. That was in 1931 and was owned by Mr. Clifton and Mr. Arendt. That's A-R-E-N-T. Cormac Shorb bought the Tribune in 1932. He was leasing the Joseph Herald in Joseph, Oregon, but he moved to Le Grand to go over the Tribune and changed its name to the Eastern Oregon Review. And Mr. Shorb printed the paper in Joseph several months when he purchased the newspaper plant and moved into the Curry Building at 106 Elm Street in Le Grand. The Curry Press had been located there in 1928. This address was next to the fire department where we now, it's the old fire department where the museum is located. And the address next to it then became this rifle at Z-W-E-I-F-E-L Fleming Company at 106 and 108 Elm. Mr. Shorb had his shop in one part of the building and his stationery store in part of the Hart photography shop. So he ran both of those businesses from there. In 1938, he moved the shop to the Sacagawea Hotel building at 1408 Adams Avenue. And it remained there until Kenneth and Lorraine Pressler purchased it in 1963. And it was Mr. Pressler who came to ask me to be the editor of it. That was in 1942 that he bought the review, and then also he bought the Elgin Reporter, so he ran both newspapers. The review was published on Thursday and the Elgin Reporter on Friday, and then along with that they put out the Union County Shopper and the Review Advertiser published on Sunday, and a bargain ballot that was sent to all papers.
What was that, a bargain ballot?
Yeah, ballot, B-A-L-L-O-T, a ballot. I don't recall now exactly what that was because I didn't have anything to do with it. I just wrote news for the newspaper itself, but some of my articles were put in the Elgin Recorder. And then Mr. Pressler would put some of the articles in the Review Advertiser to show people, interest people in perhaps taking out a subscription to the newspaper itself.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed there in the Adams Avenue. I should say that Mr. Pressler had mainly a job printing shop which supported the newspaper because the newspaper couldn't have made it on its own at that time. So he had the print shop which did a big business. And he got himself particular printers because he was tried to be absolutely sure that everything was perfect before it went out when he did job work.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what was his main goal in having the newspaper since it wasn't an economic reason?
I don't know if he had been in newspaper work before he came to LeGrand, but he may have. But I think the opportunity was there. And with the combination, and he had all the machinery to do the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And when Mr. Shrove wanted to sell, then he purchased it and was doing a good job. He just needed more people on the staff
mm-hmm.
at the time. He had correspondents from out across the Union County. The different towns would have a correspondent, so they would have a column in the newspaper. And
how significant was newspaper to the community during that time?
Well, I think very much so. I suppose everyone took the daily, but lots and lots of people took the weekly because it was filled with a lot of personal news.
Mm-hmm.
If someone came to town to visit, or if they were sick in the hospital, or any of these things, then they were in the weekly newspaper. And it was very popular with people who had moved out of town but wanted to stay in touch with things that were happening locally.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big mailing every week.
You talk about news of people visiting and news of hospital events and things like that. I would imagine that's quite different than today with privacy issues and...
Oh, yes. Yes.
All of that.
And no one wants their address listed or
mm-hmm.
that they're going to be away from home or anything like that.
Was there a potential to have gossip in the paper during that time or not so much? Or was it considered gossip or was it just considered
news? No, it was considered news because you wanted to know about your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
It was that small town, a family feeling. And yes, every time George Fleischman came home to visit, which was quite often, then his name would appear in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. So he couldn't just sneak in and out of town that way.
No one could do that. And then, of course, people would clip out these articles about people they knew and put them in their family scrapbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And one lady would cut out articles and put them in a scrapbook if she knew anybody or anything that was happening. And she ended up with something like 58 scrapbooks, which were given to me to care for over the years. I still have them waiting for an archive to put them in.
Mm-hmm. Is there more about the history of the paper that you'd like to share?
Let's see. At one time, the newspaper was the full size, like the Observer is, the big paper. But in 1964, he went back to the tabloid size newspaper. And the next year, he added Steve Rowe to the staff. And that's when they began the green papered Union County Shopper, which was mailed to every resident in Union County. After 2 years, then they changed the name of it to the Review Advertiser, put on orange paper, and delivered it Sunday mornings free of charge to every resident in the Grand. And then they extended it to Annan City as well. In July of 1965 is when they purchased the Elgin Recorder, which was also a weekly. They bought it from Dick Lyman with Jack Jewell as its editor. And working with him were Loma Carlson and managing Harvey. The bargain bought was an ad that cost nothing unless it brought results. They put it in, and then if they sold the item, they would pay for the ad. But if it didn't sell, then there was no charge.
Was that by a percentage then, or a flat rate?
It was probably a flat rate. I don't know. Again, I wasn't involved in that part. That was Steve Rowe's area.
Okay.
Let's see. They introduced the mini-review in March of 1966, and with 450 copies placed in motels, restaurants, and places of business. It included jokes, advertisements, and bits of information. And by 1968, they were printing over 1,000 copies weekly. So it was on August 1st, 1968, that I was hired as the editor.
Can you tell me about your daily duty as editor?
I went out on the street and got the news. I attended city commission meetings, and I went up to the courthouse and got news of record. I did the society page, like weddings and birthdays. I did funerals, the obituaries. I did weather. I interviewed people and wrote feature articles about them. I had learned to take pictures with a camera that Ron Cooper at the Observer had taught me how to use. So I was able to also do the photographic work at the Review.
How large was the staff?
Very small. I was it for a while.
Oh.
Except for the correspondence.
Well, that explains why you had so many different categories.
So a weekly, you know, you just got into a routine. And then articles would come in from organizations, clubs, and that type of thing. So you were more editing those and getting them ready to be printed.
What about national news? How did you get that information?
In an envelope by mail, we would get things like that, but it wasn't, we didn't get it the day it happened. We didn't try to be a daily. Since it came out once a week, it was more a summary of what had happened in the week. But we didn't stress national news particularly. It was local news. That was what the newspaper was for, and that's where we put our main effort.
Mm-hmm. So it was very community-oriented?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Okay.
That was a very good time. It was a good crew. There were let's see. They had a printer, Jack Jewell, and Joanne Mason ran the linotype, and so did Ken Pressler's son, Ray.
And what was that called? That
linotype.
Linotype?
Linotype, yeah. It was a machine that they typed, and hot lead would form letters, and they would drop down into what they call a gallery, and it would make a column of print. And then after they got done printing it, they would print it on a piece of paper and bring the paper to me, and then I would proof the paper and make corrections for anything that they had missed. Then I would send the paper back to them. They would recast the mistakes and put them in the column, corrected. Then the lead columns would go to the printer, and he would put them in a case that would lock down. The case would be put on the press that had big rollers of paper. When they would run it, the paper would go over the type, print it, which would print it, and then it would come out and they'd cut it into new paper size and fold it. Then Anna Meilenberg would see that it was mailed out. She did a lot of things around the office that I wasn't aware of, bookkeeping and just whatever needed to be done, she was there to do it.
Mm-hmm. Can you say any more about the equipment that was used?
Somewhere I have something told the name of the 1110 Premier Press. That's P-R-E-M-I-E-R. It was 1110. And we moved from 1408 Adams Avenue to 218 Depot Street in the Grand, and they moved this press down the street and into the other building, into the basement.
Did it have to be disassembled to get into the building?
Not particularly, no. They put it on the back of a truck and just brought it down. Just put it into the building.
That must have been a sight for people to see the giant press going down the road.
Yeah, that was very slowly done.
On wheels or on a trailer?
A trailer that was on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, oh, there are the pictures of it. See how it, what it was and how it was brought in. And so then they were able to have a lot more room in our new headquarters.
How did this printing press operate?
Well, I guess it was run by electricity to turn it on and off. Again, I wasn't the printer.
It wasn't your job.
I was just aware that the big press would run and it would just rumble the whole floor.
Mm-hmm. Was it loud in there?
It was quite loud in the print shop, but if you closed the door between, you could hear it, but it wasn't too loud.
So what was your workspace like then for editing?
When we were on Adams Avenue, I just had a little desk right in among the machinery. It was a long, dark, narrow room, and with all the job printing and the newspaper printing, it was very crowded and dirty. And so when we moved over to this other building, they were able to had the office in one part of the building and the press and print shop in the other. And that made it much better. It was very good.
Now, when you were editing, you mentioned that you edited, I'm not sure what you called them.
Oh, the Gallic proofs, what they were called.
And so those are actual metal pieces?
Yes.
Okay, so you edited them in that form?
They had printed the galley on paper. So what I got was a paper column that, as it would appear in the newspaper, then they would put all these columns together, eight across the page, or six, whatever, and they could put pictures in. The pictures were metal. They had to pour the metal and imprint the picture. I don't know again how that was done exactly, but that would come out on the newspaper print.
And so then you would edit and make your notes on the paper and then send it back for changes? And was this a process that was done only once, or then did you have to edit a second time?
At one time, I was the proofreader at the Observer. And I was downstairs with their big press, and that was noisy. When they would bring me the galley proofs, I would proof them and I would send them back. I was proofreader at the Observer. And they would bring me the galley proofs. I was down there with the big press, where it was very noisy. I had a desk there near the Lamotype machines. And I would proof the galleys and send them back. And then they would bring me a corrected one. And if there were more errors, I would mark them again and send them back. And it got to the point where they finally stopped making the corrections because I kept wanting more galley proofs to be, because there were still errors, and I was a little bit too insistent that everything had to be correct. That was early on at the Observer. Then with the review, I think we just did it a time or two, and the operators were very good. Sometimes errors came through, but they were very careful with their work, so it wasn't necessary to do it that many times.
What would you say was your favorite part of working for the paper? What did you enjoy the most?
Seeing the paper come out.
Yeah. The finished product?
See the product. Because we'd spend all these hours gathering news, writing it up, seeing the whole process, and then to have it in your hands that this is your week's work. And you look at it and wonder if you could have done a better job or what you should do for the next week, follow-up stories or new people to interview. It's an exciting employment. I didn't think of it really as employment as much as I could hardly wait to go to work every day. And I still feel the same way about it.
Now, you wrote a lot of different stories. I'm sure they had, you had a variety of topics in your stories.
Yes, I did.
What are some of the most memorable ones?
Well, I attended the commission meetings, maybe it was council at that time, up in the upstairs of the fire department. And through meeting the councilors, I went with the city manager on a tour of the city, and we investigated the new dog pound that they had out by the fairgrounds. And I rode in a police car so that I could see what they did in a day's work. went out to Hot Lake when it was a nursing home and interviewed some of the ladies there who were going to have an art show. And I wrote a story about firefighters who went out and fought the wildfires, forest fires, mm-hmm. in the summertime. And I wrote travel articles, just a variety, and I think that's what I enjoyed was the variety. I even went up to the school and then wrote a critique about the play that the high school had put on. Mm-hmm. I just did that on my own, and the next time they put on a play, they asked if I would come and do it again. So I thought that was very nice of them. Mm-hmm. Another thing I was asked to do was to go to the high school and teach a class on newspaper work. I felt very unqualified to do that, but again, they talked me into going up and having this class of young students, and the interest that was shown made it an easy task, because we just more or less visited about what it was like to work for a newspaper and what was required, and I think probably a number of them went on to do newspaper work, mm-hmm. or at least to be involved in journalism in, say, the school paper or the college paper.
When did you begin to see changes in the technology of the way the newspaper was being put out?
Oh, goodness. I went back to the Observer. I had quit the Review because we wanted to travel the world. And later on, after we had done that, I worked at the Observer again for a short time. And they were beginning to do they would make these plates. I don't know if they were tin, aluminum, where everything appeared on this metal sheet through a camera, and I don't know how it was done, but that was the beginning of the technology. Mm-hmm. It was strange to me at the time, and I wasn't there long enough really to get acquainted with it. But at that time, I was doing dummy work, which you take the pieces of print on paper, cut them out, and you lay them on what's called a dummy sheet. It's a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And you put them in the columns. You fit in your squares or your pictures and all that. And so I was doing part of that, too. And then that wasn't so necessary because, I don't know, they were just coming up with new ways. And so when you get to that part, I really don't know. The new technology with the computers and the, mm-hmm. all this, we didn't have any of that at all. Mm-hmm. We had an old-fashioned typewriter, non-electric,
with the old ink ribbons and...
Yeah. It was a different world.
Mm-hmm. Did it change your interest at all in what you were doing, the changes in technology?
It's the way you feel about the past. You regret that you don't have the past, but the future is exciting because of all of the more things you can do easier and faster and better. The one thing that I probably would miss the most is the smell of ink.
Yeah.
When you walk into a newspaper office, mm-hmm. There's not that smell of ink. And that, to me, was the newspaper. Mm-hmm. I had to tell you. Any more on that, I guess.
Did it change the expectations of the people as far as what they may want to see in the newspaper?
It wouldn't in a weekly.
Okay.
No. You would have a harder time getting information about them as we did before, as far as going on a trip or being in a hospital. That wouldn't be allowed. People are afraid to have anything known about themselves now because of the changing world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've always said that I lived in the best of times. We didn't have much, but we had all we needed. And we had a relationship with people that was warm and friendly and very important
mm-hmm.
to your life.
Okay, I'm going to ask kind of a two-part question here. As far as the community, what kind of, how did they perceive the paper? And how did they see that as a part of their community?
You mean the people who...
The people of the community.
It was highly thought of. Yes,
okay.
It was.
Okay. And then did... how was it seen by other people, other sources of news or other organizations?
Well, there's an Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association, and they have a contest every year among newspapers of they have them according to so many subscriptions or I don't know just how they do it, but they're divided so that they can receive recognition for their work according to their size and staff and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the review, after I had been there just 5 months of the 12 allotted ones, we had to make a scrapbook and send in to the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association to enter this contest. And just after 5 months, we were awarded a third place winner in Community Service Division
mm-hmm.
for what we had accomplished in just that short a time. We were very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. So it was definitely seen as a service to the community, but not only by the community members themselves, but by, it had received recognition
yes.
from outside of that.
Yes, by the Newspaper Association.
Okay.
And after I had left, I had prepared another scrapbook. And as I recall, I think they got a first on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we were very proud of that accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also mentioned that not too long after that, the newspaper was sold to someone else?
I'm not sure of the actual date, but after I left, the newspaper plant burned. It burned in November of 1975, and Mr. Pressler went in with Otis Palmer at Palmer's printing shop for a while, and then in 1979 they moved to where the hobby shop is across the tracks. They were in that building for a while, and then Mr. Prester finally sold the paper to Gary Eisler, E-I-S-L-E-R, and Gary set up shop near the shop where we had been on Adams Avenue. So I went over there. He wanted me to be there for a while until he got adjusted, and so I helped him for a short while. Then eventually Gary left town and sold the paper again. It went through several sales, and eventually, and I don't recall the year, the people that had it left town and left the equipment that they had. Of course, by now it was all, there was no press. It was done by how? What's it called? Oh, turn it off. Yeah, I should back up just a little bit. When Mr. Pressler sold the newspaper to Gary Eisler, he kept the print shop part, the job shop, and so it was still called Particular Printers. Then when Gary moved over to Adams Avenue, he didn't need a printing press because it was all done computerized, and then it was printed. I think he may have taken it to Pendleton, to the Eastern Oregon, East Oregonian, or somewhere over there where it was actually printed. I know there was also a print shop in Baker City that might have done it. So they didn't, they just had a very small office and wrote up their articles, and then Gary would take it, and I don't know how it was done. But the life of what you knew as an old newspaper man didn't, no longer existed. Mm-hmm. And then I left from there, and the eventual demise of the newspaper was a very sad thing. And since then, in out of Elgin, I believe they have tried to have weekly newspapers, but nothing has really lasted for any length of time, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone would enjoy a weekly newspaper about people. Mm-hmm. The Observer is doing a good job now, but there's just something about the weekly.
What do you suppose kept you interested and kept you going back? Because it seems like you sort of worked for a while and then you left for other things, but you came back several times.
They asked me. They asked me.
Just because they asked?
Yes, yes. One time, Hill, Dylan Larson Hill, asked me to do a couple feature stories. They were putting out a special edition, and she asked me to do that, so I did that. And I'd take it in to her, and she would get out her computer. That seemed so strange to me, because that wasn't how I knew newspaper was. Mm-hmm. Here again, she asked me, so I went.
So if they asked you today, would you go back?
Probably. No, I probably wouldn't, because it's all so different now. And getting into actually not writing, but gathering material for a publication about the history of Union County is where I'm putting my efforts now. Mm-hmm. I'm working with Eugene Smith and a board and other people who are trying to do an encyclopedia of the history of Union County, as well as these booklets on individuals, such as this, where they interview the person about how their life has been involved in Union County. Mm-hmm.